Hello, everybody. This is Stacy Parks of FilmSpecific.com, and welcome to another episode of the Startup Film School podcast. And today my guest is Micah Van Hove, who's the writer-director of a film called Menthol that I actually discovered on the No Film School website. Micah did a five-part series, very interesting series that I'll be linking to in the show notes, about his experience releasing his feature debut. Again, it's called Menthol. So we're going to take you through his journey today. One of the interesting things about what Micah's doing is he has a $0 marketing budget that he's sticking to through his release, which got me really curious. So I'm really excited to go through this with him today, and I think there's a lot for everyone to learn. So, Micah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sure. So before we kind of dive into what your releasing strategy is and where you're at with everything, give everyone a brief intro to yourself and the movie. Maybe just contextualize this for us. Let us know kind of what the budget level is, the ranges, what type of cast you have in the movie, and that sort of stuff.
Sure. Well, yeah, Menthol started as a project, I suppose, about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And it was sort of conceptualized as a short film at first, and then I wanted to make a feature after I made a couple shorts. I got bit by the bug pretty bad, and then I just was like, all right, time to make a feature, and I just jumped right in it. And this was at a time when I was just learning, well, I'm still learning, but I was just starting out learning. But I knew that feature film was the format that I was passionate about, that I wanted to pursue, that's the format that I want to be making, in the future. So I figured I'll just go straight to that. And so through the process of actually making film and going through that, I learned so much about the process itself, but also the business of it. And the film is a below $50,000 budget.
Okay.
And we financed through Kickstarter, as a lot of people are doing now.
Terrific.
And we cast for about a year in L.A. and a few other places, and just with no money, basically, for casting. So we were really picky on, choosing our actors, despite the fact that we didn't have very much money. So it was kind of a difficult scenario because you can't – it's like you beggars can't be choosers or something, but we wanted, but we wanted to be beggars and choosers. So that's kind of how that worked. And the cast is mostly people that were through the casting process that we found. And – then there are also just a few friends who are in it as well. So it's sort of like a combo of the homegrown thing and the, going through the process, the actual, process of doing these things normally, I guess, quote unquote normally. And so, yeah, in terms of my own story, I've just been, working as a filmmaker since 2010 or so, and just been really trying to explore the possibilities in micro-budget cinema, which is what this falls under and which is something that I continue to explore.
Definitely. Now, did you raise your entire budget through a Kickstarter campaign?
No. So we raised about $15,000 on Kickstarter and about $20,000 from other sources.
Okay.
Which was mostly the doings of my producer, Nate Camilla, who was really awesome at getting this all put together.
Now, is that other money, obviously the Kickstarter money you don't have to pay back, is that other money that has to be paid back, or was it more in the line of, donor money?
It's more in the line of donor money.
Okay.
Obviously we would like to pay it back, or we would like to at least build something here that we can build upon for the next film, and then be able to pay people back
next time.
The initial goal for this film for me was never to make money. It was never like, oh, I'm going to make this movie and then we're going to make money on it. It was always just like, we're going to put a bunch of energy and a bunch of resources into this thing and what we get out of it is going to be what we learn from it. And so that was my
that was your goal going into it. I mean,
yeah.
And in a way, you wanted to launch your career because this was your first feature, and you spent a year on casting. I'm assuming, you know, you obviously took your time, so you were very, I'm assuming, methodically trying to also in this process launch your career as a director or as a filmmaker.
Yeah, well, we really felt that, you know, it's the beginning of something, and
yeah.
We didn't really get too far ahead of ourselves in terms of our expectations, and I think we exceeded our expectations for this film and the kind of audience that we were able to find and the kind of life that it's had. I think we
yeah.
exceeded all those expectations, but they were also pretty low expectations, so, you know, it's kind of, yeah, it's nice to exceed your expectations. And then, you know, learn where they should be or
mm-hmm.
you know, how to apply it to the next time around, you know. So yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
Okay, so let's start with when you finished the film. And I know from the No Film School
yeah.
series that you had your world premiere at the Santa Barbara Film Festival, which is an awesome, you know, sort of medium-tier festival.
Yeah.
What was your process of applying to festivals once you finished the film? And I'm curious, and I know other people are, about how long you actually waited on that festival circuit before you made the decision to start distributing it yourself. And then also, why did you decide to start distributing yourself? Did you get any type of offers from distributors or sales agents at your festival premiere or when you continued on the circuit?
So... it feels like a long time that we waited, but I feel like I always knew that I wanted to play around with the idea of direct distribution. And
okay.
As a writer at No Film School, I've been writing about distribution and the tools that are available and how people are using those tools. For about a year, I've been writing mostly about that topic for the website. So then I was like, okay, I've been writing about this thing and you know, interviewing people in this space for... you know, 10 months, and now I want to try to put those tools to use or put those theories that I've
right.
been talking about to practice. So that's kind of why we chose that path. But we premiered in January 2014
mm-hmm.
at Santa Barbara, and then 7 months later we released online. And so we did a few other festivals. We did 3 other festivals, and that took basically 7 months.
Wow. Very long 7 months.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like, you know, we wanted to release the film. We were like, yeah, let's release it now. And then the next day we'd get an email in saying, hey, would you like to screen at this film festival? And we're like, yeah, yeah, we'd like to do that.
Right.
So it was always like it kept pushing back our timeline because we wanted to be open to the film festival experience. We wanted to have that. We wanted to see what those could do for us. But we also really wanted to just release it. So it was a bit of a push and pull, and I think that's a really big issue right now for the industry or for the process of distributing small films is that the festival audience, the festival circuit, and the market online, they're kind of... attacking each other or like they're fighting against each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it seems like something that needs to be solved. I think it is being solved with day and date stuff and people releasing their films, you know, simultaneously with a festival release, things like that. I think that's the way to do it for the future. And that's what we've learned here.
Now, I noticed too that you also had like started your own screening tour during this 7 months of the festival circuit. So why did you decide to do that? And I'm curious how you executed the screenings, if you did like direct booking with theaters
mm-hmm.
that you in cities that you identified would be a good, you know, place for your film, or did you consider using services like Tug and Gather?
Yeah, absolutely. We looked into those tools. We did some screenings. I wouldn't call it a tour exactly.
Okay.
But we did a couple screenings that we put on ourselves
okay.
that we wanted to just put out there so that people had an opportunity to see it. And those went over pretty well. I mean, we were able to, like, get more feedback and you know, give a chance for certain places to see it, but it wasn't a tour by really any, mm-hmm. any means. It was just, we did look into Tug. Tug was definitely people we were in talks with. But it was just, it's a lot of work to put a screening together. And we were sort of at the place where we're still screening it to festivals. And, you know, we wanted to do that in conjunction with our release, you know, but our release kept getting pushed back.
Mm-hmm.
So we felt that to do our own screening tour while film festivals are happening was going to be a lot of work and a lot of money. I mean, like, yeah, unless we were just screening for people in California, like, you know, San Francisco, L.A.,
uh-huh,
basically.
Uh-huh.
And then if we wanted to spend, you know, a couple $1,000 and do it in a few places across state and things like that, then we could have done that. But, again, this is like we have $0 to release this movie. And we barely had any money to submit to festivals.
Right.
So we only submitted to about 15 festivals or so.
Uh-huh.
And just tried to choose a few. I mean, I would say that's one thing that I would do more of, I guess, submit to more festivals. But at the same time, the festival circuit experience is kind of underwhelming. At least it was for me personally, in terms of, I don't know, just the amount, just is it worth it? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like the amount of time
and
energy that you spent. And they're fun and, you know, it's nice to feel recognized, I guess, but that's kind of what they're offering. And for me, I would just much rather release faster and not wait on the film festivals.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like we went to any huge festivals either. It was a little bit different. I mean, the festivals are tiered in that
right.
way, and we went to some, you know, middle-tier festivals, like you said. So it's not like this overwhelming opportunity. It's just a little more tepid.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in those screenings that you did, like in San Francisco and L.A., did you book those yourself? Did you, like, negotiate with the bookers, like, hey, we don't have any money to pay up front, we're going to split the proceeds with you, or how did you work those screenings?
Well, one of them was just offered to us. It was just like, hey, would you guys like to come screen here at this private screening room? And we're like, yeah, let's do that. And then the other one was set up by my producer, Nate, who did the Oakland screening. And I think he just had a relationship with a theater that we knew down there or something, and
mm-hmm.
We just set up a one-night kind of thing with
uh-huh.
tickets. So I'm not actually sure the
right.
absolute specifics of how that was put together, but it was just, like, a pretty casual.
Yeah, you didn't have to pay.
Charge tickets. Yeah, we didn't have to pay for that.
Did you get a piece of the box office, or was it a free screening?
We did charge box office. I don't think we got any money from that, though. I think it was in exchange for the screening. So, situation like that.
Right. So far, so good on the $0 marketing budget, because you screened, you know, you did your festivals, which obviously, I mean, you had to pay to submit, but you didn't have to pay to market those festival screenings. And then the two theater screenings that you had aside from that, you didn't spend any money in marketing or promotion. They were kind of just different, I guess. They were unique. And I guess one of the reasons you didn't go with something like Tug and take it wider, in addition to all the work that's involved, was you probably saw the writing on the wall of, like, this is going to take a significant budget to even make a dent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you can work it out with Tug so that it works pretty efficiently financially, I think. But yeah, it just depends on what your goals are and where you know, where you see the movie existing. And there were a few cities that we would have loved to bring it to that we didn't bring it to because of a little bit of that financial wall.
Now, did you think about at any point, like, hey, we should, like, try to raise a little bit more money and take this thing wider and do additional screenings? Or were you kind of, like, done with crowdfunding and all that stuff? You really didn't want to have to go back and do that.
Yeah, I don't I don't know. I guess just personally, I don't like it when the film does two Kickstarters. It just seems a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of people do it, and it works out for them to do to raise additional funds. Again, it was like this was a project that was born out of an ambition to create a feature film as one part of the puzzle. You know what I mean? It was a story that I really wanted to tell, and I had been thinking about it, and my friend Sam Jones and I have been writing for years. But it was also born out of an ambition to create a film. And that was something I wrote about in the series that was really interesting to learn about, because I think that's cool to do that if you are wanting to follow that path. But what I've sort of learned through this process is I don't want that to be a motivation to make another film, you know, the next time around. It's like, I don't want to make a movie just to make a movie. And, you know, make sure that it's the story that I want to tell, and there are those things in place first. So I don't think that I saw us going any farther with the fundraising.
Uh-huh.
We were pretty, like I said, we exceeded our expectations with our festival run and sort of our feedback for the film. So I felt like we it was our film school, you know what I mean? We learned everything
right.
We wanted to learn by going through the process once. You know, like if you can get through the process A to Z once and it doesn't destroy you, then you know that
right.
You can do it again, you know what I mean? But that's, I think, the most important thing is just getting through it. And so we got through it and didn't feel the need to continue fundraising to release the film. And I had this series going on, No Film School, and wanted to play with the idea of marketing and releasing a film with $0, with zero nepotism, you know, that's as I presented it, so.
Yeah. Okay, so that all makes sense. So then I guess off the back of, you know, 7 months later, so you're on the festival circuit, you decided to launch, you know, finally, you know, highly anticipated digital launch. You already knew you wanted to do direct distribution, so you weren't waiting around for any traditional deals or talking to sales agents or any of that. You said, we're just going to go straight to market on digital, on the internet, and you chose Real House and Vimeo as your partners. So I'm curious about the process of that and why you chose those two companies versus, say, going with a digital aggregator and trying to get onto iTunes or any of those platforms.
Sure, yeah. And we were approached by sales agents during the process.
Okay.
And we talked to some of them, but I mean, frankly, they're a bit scammy in the mid to low range independent film world. From our experience, they need upfront money and they make you all kinds of promises, and it sounds like bullshit.
Right.
So there was a lot of like thinking about that stuff, but learning that it's just a trap for small filmmakers who, you know, dream of having a larger release but aren't going to make it there, and they kind of prey on those ambitions, which is lame, but, you know, I don't know. That was our experience.
Okay, yeah.
Anyways. But yeah, like I said, I was writing for, you know, 10 or so months on the website about distribution, so I've done a big roundup post on No Film School about all the tools available today for filmmakers.
I remember that. Very comprehensive. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to update that, but it does have a lot of good information and just shows you who's out there right now and who's doing this stuff. And so I've interviewed tons of these platforms personally and talked to the founders and, you know, just wanted to get a sense of who's out there and who these people are. And Vimeo and Real House were not only the best two platforms from a financial standpoint, the way they model their payouts are pretty very, very efficient, but also just the people that I talked to there are really passionate about the space, do really care about getting films out there and creating new markets and curating content. And I felt like they're just the best two platforms out there at the moment. So that's how we arrived at
that decision. Yeah, I mean, I'm so curious because it's like obviously when you go on a platform like, you know, either of those, you are, you know, solely responsible for driving traffic to these platforms. Well, there's some element of, you know, maybe they'll get some traffic to these sites and they may see your, you know, they may see menthol when they stumble upon there. But, you know, at the end of the day, really, you are responsible for driving sales of the film. Fortunately, you don't have a super high budget. I mean, you were really, really smart to keep that, you know, under $50,000 because what that means is that, you know, it's obviously a lot more realistic to try to, you know, recoup some of that money. Not that that's your motivation, but let's say you had an investor for that amount. It's a lot more realistic to recoup, you know, $35,000 than it is a few hundred thousand when you're on these digital platforms and you have $0 marketing budget. So I'm just curious, what is your marketing and promotional strategy to drive sales of menthol on these platforms, or are they getting involved in any way to help?
Yes, good question. I know that, yeah, the bottom line is you're responsible for the traffic. They're just hosting sales. And there's a number of places that can do this. Distribution is not really the problem. Distribution's been solved. If you want your film to exist online, it can exist online in a number of ways. So it's all about driving the traffic to those places. And the way that we're doing it is in kind of a meta-marketing way, which is by doing this series on No Film School, talking about the distribution is the marketing. You know, in a way, it's like, this is a part of the conversation that I've been involved in for about a year, and I feel like I know a lot about this space right now and what's going on and can kind of talk it through with people. So that's why I started the series on No Film School was, hey, we can talk about distribution, and it'll help market the film to other filmmakers to start. So that's what we did at the start, and also we felt that our core audience that we found through Kickstarter is really important, and it's really about that core audience, and if they can spread out their, you know, social links or whatever and help bring the film to more people, I think nourishing that core audience is really important for trying to release something with no money. It's just, if you don't have money, then maybe you have people, and those people can help spread it. But, you know, that's just like any other social awareness, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. Share it.
So is one of your core audiences then independent filmmakers? So because if you're, I guess, as part of the No Film School series, that's part of your marketing. Obviously, the audience of No Film School is going to be independent filmmakers. So in one way, like that is your core audience almost, is other independent filmmakers.
Yeah, I think that you know, it wasn't part of the plan necessarily, but yeah, that's kind of how that worked out. And because of the No Film School stuff and because of just the nature of how we've been writing about this stuff, it's just been, you know, very, very open. Just like, hey, we're going through the process. Come along with us. Come learn some things with us. And, you know, maybe you can avoid some things that we fell into, or maybe you can, you know, formulate your own plan based on this. Because I know there's a lot of people who are going through these decisions right now. And, you know, I like small films. And I really like having other filmmakers as my audience, and as I'm sure they like having me as an audience. And it's a cool thing to be able to do for other filmmakers as support for their work, you know. So yeah, that's part of our core audience, but also the core that we formed in the Kickstarter campaign, which also exceeded our expectations of the kind of folks that came on board to support us and to spread the word and stuff, and who are really interested in this film, specifically in the story. So it was, it was a process of sort of combining those two different demographics, I guess, and then going from there. And we're just finding more people now because we just released last week. So now it's like, I made a video that was like, this is the end of the life of the film, but it's actually kind of like another beginning.
A new beginning.
since we released just last week, it's like now bunch of people are coming out of the woodwork and connecting to the film, and we're finding new audience every day that way. So that's pretty cool and pretty gratifying, and that's the part of the process I kind of wish we got to quicker. But this is just how long it took, and I think it's important to embrace the amount of time that releasing a movie will take, because, yeah, if you don't, then maybe you'll never release it, or maybe it won't have that kind of effect. So.
Interesting. So you launched last week on Real House and Vimeo, and we'll link to your website and those sites in the show notes so everybody can head over and check it out and buy it if you want to see Micah's movie. But so have you been getting sales so far?
Yeah. So
cool.
We've been getting sales. It's been pretty cool to watch the little ticker
go
and see where they're coming from, you know, and see who's liking it. And also, it's cool to read the reviews and, like, just see what people think about the movie, because that's, you know, that's still what I'm interested in, you know, more than anything is, like, are people connecting to the film? Like, do they want to talk about it? Do they want to get to a discussion about the themes of the film or about the any ideas that they excavated from the movie? So I like getting into those kind of conversations, and this has definitely proved a good avenue for that. And so, yeah, I think it's really nice to have a place where it lives. You know what I mean? It feels good about where that lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it can just exist there, you know, forever until the internet explodes. And also in terms of, like, you know, having a small budget for that stuff as being a more realistic point to make money for investors, I think that's an important point, just going back at the minute. And I definitely plan, you know, future films that I make, you know, I really am still interested in micro-budget cinema and what it has to offer and what I have to offer to it. And I think that keeping budgets low is really, really important for getting investors interested. And also
Hello? Oh, there you are. Sorry. Yeah, no, 100% agreed. And that's why it's funny, because I didn't read in the No Film School series anything about the budgets. I think I went into this not even realizing what it was, but hoping it was really low, because when you said $0 marketing budget, I was hoping it was, you know, ultra micro, partially at least Kickstarter funded, so there were no huge liabilities laying over your head, which there aren't, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a nice part of the process, and, you know, structuring films in the future, it's definitely on my mind of, you know, how can we get investors in for small amounts of money where the risk doesn't feel life-altering and where the reward is actually a tangible number that they can make back. And
well,
happy.
And one of the interesting things is you're going to find out firsthand through this release, you know, over the next 6, 8, 12 months, like what your numbers are, and be able to use that when you set up your next film and say, hey, here's how we did on the first one. We can at least meet this, if not exceed it, because of everything we've learned. And so you actually will have hard data to show potential investors of what, you know, what type of money you're able to generate, and just really reverse some of the risk for them coming into it.
Yeah, data is really important to have now. I mean, obviously, it's kind of what drives everything now. If you have hard data on what you can do, then that can only help you.
Totally.
But I will say that, you know, we did this with the $0 release spend. That was our kind of concept, but that was also just what we had access to. So that's what we worked and had money, so let's do it. But the next time around, I will definitely try to spend some money on it. And that's what, you know, that's just part of the learning process. Is, yeah, we embraced this model for this film, and it worked. But next time, I would love to get somebody on the team who is full-time in the marketing and who is really, you know, interested in that stuff. So.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that was really cool in the series, I think it was near the end, you said one of the biggest lessons you learned from the whole experience was, what kind of person are you? And I think this is a critical realization about, you know, you kind of have to think about from the beginning or sometime in the process of, am I a marketing type person or am I not? So can you elaborate on that realization that you had?
Yeah, I think it's pretty important to sort of assess your abilities and your constitution for this type of stuff.
Yeah.
At the beginning, because, you know, for me personally, it's confusing because I am and I'm not at the same time. I'm like, yeah, I really like to start conversations with people, and I really like to you know, spread and drive stuff, people to my work and share my work. But at the same time, I'm not somebody who wakes up in the morning thinking about marketing or thinking about you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's a bit of a tough thing to manage. But just personally, you know, when for other people, when you start your project, just think about it. Am I realistically going to be able to get up and do something?
Marketing and sales every day.
Yeah. Or do I need somebody else to do that for me? Do I have that kind of capacity for that? And, you know, it's okay if you don't. I think a lot of filmmakers don't. I think it's a bit of a tricky scenario now with this sort of the flooded market that we live in. It's just there's so many films. And it kind of feels like you don't have a choice as a filmmaker to promote your stuff or not. And I think you still do have a choice. And, you know, whatever is healthiest for you as a human being, I think should come first. But I think it's important to be able to, you know.
Take an honest look at yourself, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it goes along with, because I always tell filmmakers and I tell my clients when I first start working with somebody, you know, I'll usually say, you know, first things first, what are your goals? You know, what do you want to accomplish with this film? And because I think that's really important to look at from the beginning, too. You know, is it exposure? Is it to launch your career? Or is it to make money for whatever reason? Maybe you have to pay back an investor. Maybe you want to try and make money yourself. And then you know, kind of in parallel with that question is, what are your goals? And then, you know, realistically, what kind of person are you? So I would add your question to that equation of like, okay, now, and if you aren't somebody who is a natural fit for marketing and sales, you know, would you consider partnering with somebody who is, and bring that person on the team? Because you're going to need somebody to cover that function these days, you know. So that's question now is just as important as what is your goals? What kind of person are you? So I'm curious, I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, I think it has a lot to do with confidence, too. You know, like
yeah.
A filmmaker can only market their own film as far as their confidence in the film goes. And so that's kind of how you can gauge that. I mean, a lot of people make a film and then they hate it and they hate themselves and then they can't market it because they don't feel good about it. So, you know, depending on how you feel about the content of your film, that's how you can make those decisions. And, you know, that's how other people know as well, you know,
yeah.
about your film. It's a question of confidence too. You know, it's what kind of person are you and how confident are you in the material that you created?
Totally. So what were a few of your biggest wins during this whole releasing process? And then by contrast, what were some of the biggest obstacles you faced? And then, of course, probably what a lot of people are wondering is, having gone through all this, what would you do differently next time, or what are you going to do differently next time? I know you just said one thing is you will have some money for marketing. You're not going to try and pull off the $0 marketing budget a second time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, again, in line with our expectations, just releasing the movie, taking it through its A to Z, you know, from, hey, I have this funny idea for a movie, and then fast forward 5 years to, okay, it's available, people can click a button and buy it. And that 5-year process of doing that, that was the biggest win for us.
Uh-huh. Actually getting something past That's the finish line, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, that's, I think that, you know, it's an important part of it. I don't think it's not everything because, you know, anybody can do that pretty much now. But I do think that going through the process once is important, and I think the feeling of just it existing online now is pretty much the biggest win for me personally, because it's like you can't move on until this process is complete. So, you know, as filmmakers, we're always dreaming up the next project. We're always thinking about what we can do better. And so I've been spending a lot of time thinking about that stuff, but I haven't been able to fully commit to that, thinking about that stuff because it hasn't been out of my system yet. So that was a big win. You know, in terms of challenges, just patience too. Just waiting for festivals and just really testing our endurance in terms of the long term. You know, how long can we continue to be putting energy into it when we are frothing at the mouth to make something new? You know, and also just navigating new concepts of distribution as we're going through the process. Like I mentioned, talking to sales agents who were bullshit, or you know, just learning how the old world system and the new system, new distribution methods are conflicting, and kind of just like trying to find your place. I mean, it is a challenge, I think, and just trying to stay motivated to continue to talk about the film and continue to spread awareness about the film. Those are things that were challenges for me. When, like I said, you want to make the next thing, you want to move on, but you can't, and you should embrace the fact that you can't until it's complete and
fully released.
Yeah, and in terms of what I would do different next time, you know, yeah, like I mentioned, the $0 marketing spend is cool and everything, but I would like to be pretty strategic next time about how, where some money goes into that, even if it's not a lot of money. I mean, there's a difference between having $0 and having $5,000.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a huge difference in terms of just releasing money and spreading awareness. And I would do more screenings. I would do more things through TUG and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would skip film festivals almost entirely. I would go to like one or two festivals and try to just target those festivals that you really thought were good homes for the film, and then save yourself half a year or so waiting for other festivals,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
just do your own screenings or have it released online as soon as you hit the festival.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's something that I would do differently. And just, you know, yeah, I guess just managing expectations is, I guess, just another piece of advice. And, you know, making sure your expectations are realistic for what your product is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things is expectations of time, like you mentioned, because I guess a lot of people don't realize that, you know, from beginning to end full release of a film, like let's say even from the day you get it in the can, you do some festivals or screenings, you put it out on digital, I mean, there's still at least 2 to 3 years of time of, you know, promoting and going through a release. Because you can't just, like, you just put it out on Real House and Vimeo. You can't just, like, go, okay, it's out there. I'm going to wash my hands and move on to the next film. It's like you really have to give this release its due because this is, like you said, the new beginning. And so that may be 6, 7, 8 months, and then it always will be going on in the background if you want it to live on, you know. So I think that's one of the most unrealistic expectations that I hear from filmmakers is, in, you know, in regards to time. And also, of course, you know, what they think the film can do monetarily versus what the reality is of, you know, the type of digital revenue that's realistic and how that relates to the type of budget you have to market it. So anyway, lots of interesting things going on. So I'm curious, you've alluded to some future projects. What's next for you, and when will you start the next film?
Basically, I've been writing a script for a couple of years now, and I'm working on that with the same producer I worked on this with. His name's Nate, and we have been developing that into a project. And that's a kind of a larger scale project. Well, sort of larger. I mean, larger than this. So that's something that we're developing, and you know, we'll see how long that takes and where that goes. But I'm also simultaneously developing an idea to create more micro-budget films and distribute more micro-budget films in a really efficient way. So that's kind of what I've been dreaming up as well. It's like you make a film, and now the next step is, okay, make a bigger film. You know, that's true, but also not true. I would like to do that, but I'd also like to make even smaller films and distribute them entirely myself and distribute them quickly. Definitely something that's important to me. So I've been developing a system where that can exist in a way that I can keep making films and not go crazy and be able to actually nourish a lot of the ideas that are in my brain when they're still in my brain and still feel important, as opposed to, you know, dragging out an idea to the point where it gets destroyed, which I think happens to a lot of people and a lot of ideas and a lot of things, is that just the process just takes so long that those ideas don't get to become explored in the ripe moment when they should be. So I'm really, really trying to protect that with the future of what I do. And I really like the idea of distributing myself, doing it the way we've done for this, but just making sure that we have a very specific audience in mind when we're pre-producing the movie, so we know where to spend our marketing dollars, even if it's only a couple thousand dollars or something to put together. You know, that should just be part of the pre-production, I think, and knowing what the end is at the beginning. You know, with Menthol, it was a question mark because we were learning all this stuff for the first time. But I think that's just, you know, I think that's advice that could probably be applied to a lot of parts of filmmaking. Is, you know, the more work you do in pre-production, you know, the better of an idea you have for the outcome.
Definitely. So, Micah, thank you so much. What's the main website where people can read more about the film and get the links to Real House and Vimeo? Is that all on your central website?
You can just go to mentholmovie.com, and that'll bring you to the Vimeo page, and that'll have the film that's available. Also, Real House, if you find the movie on Real House, there's a bunch of links there for the series and some bonus video content, which we're releasing, and I've been releasing some bonus content as well in the series, this interview series, you know, trying to do more of this kind of stuff, talk about the process, be open about the process, what kind of struggles did we go through, and just be able to talk about those openly and honestly, and hopefully that will help people, but also get people interested in the film. That's sort of the idea, is, you know, it's pragmatic, but it's also a marketing thing, you know, it's like, you know, get people interested in the film via who we are and what we've gone through to make it. And I'm releasing one more part of the series on No Film School any day now. So that'll have one more part of the puzzle for the interview series and sort of just my thoughts that I've had in the past week since we've released and what that's been like.
Cool. Okay. Well, I'm going to be sure to link up to all that in the show notes. And, once again, thank you, Micah. I'm going to be following your release closely, and I'm going to promote it to my Film Specific and Startup Film School audience, and we will look forward to seeing future installments on No Film School. So thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Stacey. This was really fun, and I'm glad that there are people like you out there who are really passionate about this kind of stuff, because we need people like that, because filmmakers need guidance.
Definitely.
So, appreciate you having me on the show.
Very cool. All right, so best of luck, Micah, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay,
later.
Bye-bye. Bye.